सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओके Jainitai, Jainitai.
Okay, so we're on Adhyaya 1, Adhikarana 3, Anucheda 26. To refresh everyone's memory, the Srimad Bhagavatam verse we're discussing is 2.139. Quote, one should concentrate mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who alone distributes himself in so many manifestations, just as ordinary persons create thousands of manifestations in dreams. One must concentrate the mind on him, the all-blissful absolute truth. Otherwise, one will be misled and will cause his own degradation. End quote. Then, the Jiva Goswami is Srila Sridhar Swami. Commentary says, quote, he is the Atma within all beings, Atma, and causes everyone to experience things by the functions of intelligence. One should worship this Lord alone, who is eternal, and not be attached to anything else, since by attachment one falls into samsara, atmapataha. An example of one person experiencing everything by the senses is given. It is like seeing many people in a dream. In a dream, one produces many bodies, and one sees them with the senses. Because the Lord possesses vidya shakti, he is not bound up by these things, end quote.
Yes, because he knows himself with that vidya shakti, but we, because we don't know the Lord, we're under the avidya shakti. So anything we get attached to will bind us, because as soon as you're not doing something in connection with Krishna, then you're not on the transcendental platform. So that's the point, is that being absorbed in him alone or attached to him alone is all you can do. And then there's not a problem, because he being everything, you can see everything in the context of him. But if you see anything without the context of him, then one will be bound. That's just the way it works. It's not a question of maybe or sometimes. No, one will be, because when you see anything without him, you're on the material platform. And so as soon as then you see everything in context of Krishna, then you're no longer on that material platform. So this then becomes very important, that you have to understand that he, the person, is all you. If you want to actually situate yourself properly eternally, where there will be no difficulties, then you have to focus on alone. You can't focus on anything else, you know, not seeing it in the context of Krishna. So the great devotees, they see everything connected to Krishna. So then they're always seeing that whatever it is that's wonderful, it's Krishna. You know, Krishna is the scriptures. So the jnanis get attached to all the, you know, the grammar or the rules, but that all comes from Krishna. So actually they're attached to Krishna, but they don't know it. They think it's just the scripture. Or one gets attached to guru. One understands that Krishna, he's the guru. He's the one that's actually giving everything. Because it says, Sridhar Swami said, through intelligence and every living entity that is perceiving, you know, the surroundings and interacting with the world. Because it's through this intelligence who prajumna and controls the senses. And so, therefore, then everything is being connected to him. So then the scriptures, the guru, the sadhus, you know, family, friends, wealth, land, position, facilities, all that, whatever it is that we find that we like in those, it's all coming from Krishna. It's Krishna's qualities that makes the house nice or makes the money valuable or, you know, whatever it is. It's Krishna that does that. So that means we love Krishna alone, and then we have friendship with everybody else. So the love is for Krishna, prema is for Krishna, and for the devotees, then there's the and others, then there's that friendship, because they are all part and parcel of Krishna. And so we have that friendship aspect. And so like that, then everything goes very nicely. And in the material world, then we see is that, or at least here, is that when you're dealing with conditioned souls, then there's also the aspect of compassion, because they don't understand that they're the soul. They don't necessarily understand they're not the body. So by compassion, then that friendship extends as compassion. So that friendship, that natural friendship of the soul directed towards Krishna becomes prema. Directed towards other living entities, it becomes friendship. Directed towards those who are less fortunate, that becomes compassion. So all those then naturally manifest from there. But Krishna has to be the center. That attachment has to be to him. Then you can see anything else in connection with him. Then it becomes nice. And then it just increases. Just like, let's say, the mother has attachment for the child. And then in that attachment, seeing things connected to the child, it inspires love of the child. So when we see Krishna as the only, worshipable object, that means then everything else in connection with Krishna then also inspires us in our love for Krishna. And it's not that we deal nicely with the child's possessions and facilities because of the connection with the child. So automatically we will deal nicely with all living entities because of their connection with Krishna. So that work? Yeah. Okay. Charuji?
Okay, back to Srila Jiva Goswami. The Lord sees everything through the functions of everyone's intelligence. Sa Aikshata, the Lord glanced. Aitareya Upanishad. The Lord existed before the creation of intelligence. Though the Lord is the creator of bodies and dreams, it is said that the Jiva creates these bodies. Because of the Jiva's desire to create them, the Lord creates them. But he is not identical with the intellects. One should worship the Lord. The Lord is like a single Jiva, the seer of the dream, who sees many people and things in a dream. The Lord glanced, Aitreya Upanishad 112, and has natural gyan, strength, and action, Svetasvatar Upanishad 6.8. The Lord's knowledge does not depend on others. Sandhya Shristir Ahahi. The Lord creates objects and dreams because that is stated in the text, Brahma Sutra 3.2.1. Maya Matram.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead.
Maya Matram Tukartsneya Nanuhi Hivyakta Svarupatvat. The cause of the Lord's Maya, because the dreams by nature are not revealed to everyone. Brahma Sutra 3.2.3.
Yeah, because it's the particular living entity needs the Lord. Then he's the original origin of the intelligence. And it's through the intelligence, then he sees, he interacts with the living entity. It's through the intelligence. It's not through the mind and this and that. It's through the intelligence. Because then it's actual discriminating, between what is what. So that's what we're trying to do, is establish that position of what is actually the reality. So then the dreams, because the living entity wants to think about this or that, or has focused on this or that, or made something valuable, then Krishna makes the dreams accordingly. So you can say as the living entity makes the dreams, because it's the living entity who wants, and the living entity who's putting his values in particular places and his experiences. Then Krishna creates all these different things. So the living entity is never separate from the Lord or independent from the Lord, but it's done in such a way that the living entity thinks, I'm doing this. So even he works with the living entity through the intelligence. When the living entity sees something and then he thinks, I did this. It's just like the scientists, they did all this. Newton, then, he didn't actually see the apple drop on his head, but after it had dropped on his head, then he had a vision of what this meant. And so then he gets accredited, but actually it's Krishna that decides this guy, you know, understand about gravity and then drops an apple on his head. So Krishna's interacting, but we claim it as our own. But when we start seeing that actually it's Krishna, then we can always maintain that mood of service and that mood of submission to the Lord, you know, that's being done. So Krishna's revealing. So then you should use these, you know, nicely in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? This, you know, yes. Yes, no, very good. Yeah, okay. Yes, Charaji.
The Lord has the special quality of being complete as the creator of the world in its waking and dream states. The word satyam and anadim nidhim indicate that the Lord is the highest goal. Shukadev spoke thus.
Yes. So everything that we value is being worked through the intelligence, and Krishna is the source of that intelligence, and he's interacting and sees everything through this intelligence. So he's actually the one to be absorbed in, you know. So even on the platform of just that knowledge, then it's him. On the platform of existence, it is him. And on the platform of the experience and all that, it is him. So from all angles of our values, it's Krishna. It's the center, and so therefore our whole existence should be connected with him. Then if we do that, then we're connected with Krishna and his whole existence. Right? Then we're able to, within Krishna's, you know, what is the purview of his value and his actions, then we're able to take part in that. So that's the pastimes. We're able to appreciate this is what's valuable to Krishna, the Brajvasis. And so therefore, then we can take part in that. Yeah. Yes? No?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, we kind of take issue with the fact God's in control of everything, that he's the cause of everything. Because, you know, we want to do that. We want to be the cause of things. We want to control things.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to the material world, we don't like it very much, because if God exists, then why would he make a place of suffering? But he only, so it was, I mean, he's the cause of it, but it was based on our desire that he fulfilled that desire to cause it. It's just such a strange thing that, you know, we want control when we can't have it. And when we do have it, what little bit we do have, we wish we, you know, almost wish we didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a very, very nice point. Very nice point. Because he's the ultimate cause, you know, then the formal cause will be then his internal potency, you know, that they fulfill all desires. That when you transform that, then you get the material cause, you know, as what's going on around us, and then the living entity being the efficient cause, and that he's the one who desires and ways, and then the material energy transforms. So when things are going right, we don't blame God. But when things go wrong, we blame God. So that's the interesting thing. So when it goes right, then it's our credit. When it goes wrong, then it's God's problem. But then you also see in there is that that would also show the nature of the living entity, that it's ananda, that it should be happiness. You know, that there is existence. You know, so there's a problem with this death and temporariness of everything. And there is the aspect of of, you know, the action and results. You know, we expect I do an action, I do a proper action, I get a good result. And then we want that happiness. So these are three inherent, you know, natures of the living entity. So the living entities, you know, not believing in these things and that, all living entities still function according to these three principles of Satchit and Ananda. So there's no question of going outside of this or functioning outside of this. But as you said, that it's very interesting that we, so that shows also we're dependent, because it's not going the way we want. So we want the person we're dependent on to make it go the way we want. So in other words, Krishna should fulfill our desires, you know, the way we want them, not the way we deserve. You know, so you see that there is that submission to God. If God is, you know, why did God make like this and that? But that shows our submission to God, because we're expecting that he would have made it in a better way. you know, but we're leaving out our fault in the process.
Yeah, it's funny how we do that, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but it's interesting how underlying you can see is the you know, the minute nature of living entity, that nature of, you know, inherent submission, service to the Lord, that, you know, connection to the Lord, and you know, our desires within the realm of, you know, we want to function within the realm of Satchitananda, that all that is there. It's all revealed at these points when the living entity becomes disturbed and surrender, and you know, maybe as you're pointing out here, is disappointed in how things are working and tries to blame it on God. But you see, it's all just the nature of the jiva. They're acting within their nature, but they don't see it. And then they think, oh, there's no God and this and that. But they always talk about, you'll not always notice atheists always talk about how there's no God. Mm-hmm. Those that believe in God may think about God and all that. The more they're Krishna God conscious, then the more they do. But they don't necessarily, you know, put it in everybody's face if they're not interested. But the atheist always tells, you know, it's just like pagans. You always have to know that what you're eating is wrong and what they're doing is right. And, you know, it's all about that. It can't be that they have a natural, relaxed position. You know, so the jiva, it's the atheist, they think about God a lot, but unfortunately in the negative, so they don't get any real credit for that.
Right. There's a joke, how do you tell if your friend is a vegan? Don't worry, he'll tell you.
Yes. Don't worry, he'll tell you. That's the interesting thing, you know. But they never say that about vegetarians, you know.
No.
Vegetarians, just that's their decision and they're doing it. It's not political. It's more of a, you know, an ethical kind of thing. Well, vegan, it seems to be. Sorry?
Oh, sorry. There must be a lag. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. And I said sometimes it'll come up because someone will feed you. And yeah, I'm vegetarian, but it's, yeah, no, the vegan.
Yeah, that's there. But they're surprised because then they find out then. But the vegan, you don't even know the guy and he's already told you he's a vegan.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even have a relationship, you know, or you go before into some place. Yeah, it's just like, you know, you go into one of the, I remember going into a devotee restaurant, and, you know, they have the vegetarian, of course, and they have vegan. And then you sit down at the table and there's some other devotees come along, they get something, sit down. And then the conversation revolves around this, you know, why you're eating vegetarian and not vegan.
Yeah.
And they're devotees. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Haribol, you know. Yeah, so it seems to be some, because it's politicized there. Their ethics are from the political platform, not from the, you know, the necessarily a religious platform. You know. Oh, well, because it's more natural that. Vegan is Buddhist, so it's not actually a natural position for a human. It may be a diet for a non-human, but, you know, something, but it's not a human diet. Human diet centers around dairy, and then dairy with grains, dairy with fruits, dairy with vegetables, dairy with sugar. Dairy is the center. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, my brothers and sisters. To the point of why, how people consider why this world is such not perfect. When I studied different Abrahamic books, I tried to find what is the explanation why this world was created by God and why this world is created such a way. And it's interesting, they have two concepts, two explanations. First explanation made those people who had religious understanding of God, they considered that God created this world because he wanted to have someone who can worship to him. Means he was not satisfied to be alone and he wanted worshiping from others, and therefore he created this world. But then devil would not agree with his supreme position, and he created all of these troubles. And the second group of people, those who consider that God is impersonal and this world is his manifestation, his emanation. And they consider that God wanted, he was unsatisfied because he was not able to understand himself. And he created this, and he manifested himself to this world. He wanted self-cognition. He wanted to understand who is he, and therefore this world is not so much perfect because it's his attempt to understand who he is and how to be perfect.
Wow. Well, interesting thing in the first one is then what was going on with the Garden of Eden. You know, God's there with Adam and Eve. They're, you know, they're interacting, they're doing whatever they're doing. And then they're tossed out into the material world. So it was already going on before the creation. You know, and so God did have that, all these companionship and that. Is it what you mean? They think when Adam and Eve left and there was no one else there? I guess it's part of the thing, because you have Adam and Eve, and when they leave, then you know, God's place is empty. And, you know, God only has one son, you know, like that, you know. So, you know, a common man sometimes has 10 sons, but God can only have one, right? So, yeah, it's a bit, it's interesting how they come up with these things. So that's why without the parampara, without that flowing of the chit shakti, without that surrender in devotion, you can't actually know what's going on like that. So you have the interesting things in Kali Yuga, God wants to know himself, but they don't understand. That's how he's come as Lord Chaitanya, to taste what is that devotion towards himself by his greatest devotee. And what are they tasting? Because that he won't know. Because he being God, he won't know what it's like to worship God, being God. And so then he takes that mood of the devotee. So then it fits for the Kali Yuga that he's come to know. But it's not that he created the world to know. As Lord Chaitanya, he can already taste that, you know, in his eternal pastimes. But he comes here to display those pastimes to attract the living entity to him through Lord Chaitanya, to him in Vrindavan with Srimati Radharani. So it's kind of like they get little glimpses of things, you know. That's the you'll see in that, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, is in most of these philosophies, there's something there that has some, it has to be based on something. Otherwise, how do they come up with and get their philosophy? It has to be based on something solid. But what aspects they take, what they do with it, that's where the problem comes up. You know, it's just like all these different schools, they're based on the shastras, they have the guru, they have the sadhana, that they come up with some strange interpretation. So they're starting off with that aspect of, you know, God being there and God creating things, but they don't understand exactly what the mood is and why and the dynamic. You know, like we said before, I said, if God didn't exist, why does the atheist even worry about it? You know, it's just like, if something doesn't exist to you, do you talk about it? You know, it's just like, okay, you know, what's going on in the market in Zimbabwe? You know, does anybody care? You know, you don't even talk about it. You don't have to say, no, there's no market in Zimbabwe. You know, it doesn't matter what people say. You know, there can't be a market. And like, you know, what is it? That means he's always thinking about God, but in the negative aspect. Yes.
So to the point of Mataji made, it sounds like a total projection, because in both cases, the material world was created out of some frustration, which doesn't exist in God. So this is the first point. Another point, if we take cause and effect, then the theism is the cause, and the atheism is the effect. So atheism doesn't exist without theism. So yes, that's why That's why they always worry about God.
Yes, yes. Well, it's atheism.
Yeah.
So they don't have their own name.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very, very nice. Yeah, because that's the thing, is Ishvarupanishad starts off with that Om Purnamidah Purnamidam. You know, he's perfect and complete in himself. And so then it's just a matter of greater perfection and greater completeness. You know, complete, more complete, most complete, like that. But this idea is that, like you said, it's projection of their own lack, and so therefore then they deal in this way.
Also, another rabbi, he told me once in Israel that God is impersonal, but he wants to interact with his creation. So what he does, he interacts through our senses. So it's complete opposite of what the Veda teaches, is that he first saw, then we got the ability to see.
Mm.
But then saying that he's impersonal, but through our senses, he interacts with the material world, with his own creation, which is, it's like he's important, but we are more important than him. And, you know, what kind of God is that?
And he's created us, you know, and then he's impersonal. And so he wants to do this. What does that mean? That means there's a he, that means there's a consciousness, that means there's desires, you know, then there's the endeavor for action. It's very, very mixed up, sadly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, that this Rebbe belong to the Kabbalah direction, yes, because they have this concept of manifestation. They consider that God was impersonal himself, and then he manifested himself to this creation because he wanted to understand himself and watch these emotions and watch this world and then become perfect.
Yes. Amazing is, even if you take that, God becomes perfect through that, but we don't. You know? Because it's like, we're going through all these emotions, it's not becoming perfect, but I guess that's the idea, we will become perfect. But it's only perfect in connection with God, yeah. So they reverse the whole thing, they still make it about themselves, that God becomes perfect through us, so therefore we're fine, what we're doing is great, you know? We're enjoying ourselves, so then we're giving God the opportunity to enjoy all these things. You know, so it's God's enjoyment. It's about God's enjoyment, but it's God's enjoyment through them rather than our enjoyment is through God. So there's still that avidya potency working there. Strange, but true. Okay. Yes? No? Okay.
Yeah, Charlie G. Come up with all sorts of wacky stuff.
Yeah, quite wacky. It's amazing.
It seems to be creating a disturbance in society since it's not based on any.
It does. And then they fight with each other. Yeah, because then they fight with each other. And that, you know, and then, you know, ultimately when it gets down to it, it's just, you know, according to any of these philosophy, it's going to be myself and who's important to me. They're the only ones that are going to get the actual spiritual benefit, and everybody else is not. And it's thinking like that. So unless you make it God-centric, then you can't actually include other living entities. So the universal feature only can come about when it's connected to Krishna. There is no other universe. You can't say that, oh, we're Westerners, so we have to use that, and that becomes the universal principle to attract everybody. There's no question of that, because each place is different from the other, and each place doesn't have an interest or even the tolerance of the other, you know, let alone that what the other is doing is somehow universal, you know. So it's like, you know, I mean, it's the only thing that's universal is Krishna and his methods. So that means the Veda and the, you know, as, you know, it's giving the understanding and religion. There isn't anything else other than that that's universal, and to think otherwise is an illusion. Because only God is universal, you know, and everything else is temporary and regional. And even regional, it comes down to the individual.
Yeah, I can't even... So principle that I'll agree on from moment to moment within myself, let alone somebody else, that we can...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point. We're not even consistent within ourselves, let alone with everybody else.
And then expect the whole world to agree to the same thing? It's impossible. But we do all have God in common, as you pointed
yeah.
out.
And unfortunately... Yeah, and unfortunately on the conditioned platform, we all have that we think we're God in common. Yeah. So therefore, that's how the universal is everybody. Was it, the famous Acharya, come together right now over me? So, you know, it's all about me.
And Guru Maharaj, in all impersonal concepts, they usually have idea of perfect man, like Adam Kadmon in Kabbalah and in San Al-Kamil in Sufism. And it's interesting, they usually explain that we will attain full perfection if we will develop qualities of the God, because he is the perfect. And that is strange, because God tried to become perfect himself, and they want to become perfect by being like a God.
Yeah, and then God had to do things through them, and then so they're making some connections, but they're weak. They have to reverse it. They somehow or another, due to that mode of ignorance, reversed it. Yeah. Well, what to do? Huh. Charuji.
Yes. So Vritti. Having concluded that a devotee should only focus on serving the Supreme Lord through bhakti, the author next explains that the materialist, who does not possess loving disposition for the Lord, may get purified by meditation on the universal form. Thus, for the less intelligent beginners, impersonal meditation on the universal form will aid in gradually rising to the stage of realizing the greatness and sweetness of the Lord's personal form. Anucheda 27. In the next chapter, it is said, Yavanna jayate paravesmin vivesdrastari bhakti yoga tavat staviya purushasya rupam priyavasane prayata smarita. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.14. Udhriti, Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. The Supreme Lord is the seer of all worlds, both material and transcendental. In other words, the Supreme Lord is the ultimate beneficiary and enjoyer of all worlds, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 5.29. The spiritual world is the manifestation of his internal potency, and the material world is the manifestation of his external potency. The living entities are also his marginal potency, and by their own choice, they can live either in the transcendental or material worlds. The material world place for living entities because they are spiritually one with the Lord. And in the material world, the living entities become conditioned by the laws of the material world. The Lord wants all living entities who are his parts and parcels to live with him in the transcendental world. And for enlightening conditioned souls in the material world, all the Vedas and the revealed scriptures are there, expressly to recall the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. Unfortunately, the conditioned living entities, although suffering continually the threefold miseries of conditioned life, are not very serious about going back to Godhead. It is due to their misguided way of living, complicated by sins and Some of them, who are virtuous by deeds, begin to reestablish the lost relation with the Lord, but they are unable to understand the personal feature of the Lord. The real purpose of life is to make contact with the Lord and be engaged in his service. That is the natural position of living entities. But those who are impersonalists and are unable to render any loving service to the Lord have been advised to meditate upon his impersonal feature, the Virat Rupam. Some way or other, one must try to reestablish one's forgotten relationship with the Lord if one at all desires to gain real happiness in life and to reclaim his natural, unfettered condition. For the less intelligent beginners, meditation on the impersonal feature, the Virat Rupa, or universal form of the Lord, will gradually qualify one to rise to personal contact. One is advised herewith to meditate upon the Virat Rupa, specified in the previous chapters, in order to understand how the different planets, seas, mountains, rivers, birds, beasts, human beings, demigods, and all that we conceive are but different parts and limbs of the Lord's Virat form. This sort of thinking is also a type of meditation on the absolute truth. And as soon as such meditation begins, one develops one's godly qualities, and the whole world is a peaceful residence for all the people of the world. Without such meditation on God, either personal or impersonal, all good qualities of the human being become covered with misconceptions regarding his constitutional position. And without such advanced knowledge, the whole world becomes a hell for the human being. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.14 purport.
Yes, so here again we see is that connection to the Lord, that's the only way to actually, elevate yourself, and in the process, naturally, one develops good qualities. So people are talking about, everybody should be good and nice and, what is it, truthful and transparent and equitable and all these different things. But these can only happen in as much as you're connecting yourself with God. There is no other way to gain these. And so here, even the impersonal, but it's the impersonal and what's recommended. Not Mayavad, that's bogus. That's not recommended. What's recommended is that you see all these manifestations, especially the great manifestations, that they are all in connection with the Lord. And so the grandeur of something and then the taste you get from that particular, grandeur or that particular situation or object, then that's going to bring about that taste in connection with the Lord. So the Lord is the cause of sweetness. The Lord is the cause of grandeur and majesty. He's the source of these things. So just by worshiping the Lord through these features, then you're taking it back to the Lord, that the Lord is the cause of this. Some devotees were complaining about I'm not sure where it was, but someplace next to the ocean. And so the devotees to go down to the ocean and swim and play in the ocean. And someone was saying, oh, this is Maya. They're just playing. But Prabhupada is saying, no, this is the ocean is Krishna. And so they're enjoying being with Krishna. The greatness of the ocean and that pleasure they get from being, and that's there. So you see, it's when Prabhupada's talking about the greatness and the sweetness, it comes down to the greatness is that power and everything and how wonderful it is. At the same time, the sweetness is that experience that they get that actually makes them happy. That comes from Krishna. So just by doing that, one gets purified and one develops then, all good qualities. So other than God consciousness, there is no other method to, one, elevate the living entity, and two, even create a nice situation in the material world. There isn't any other way. And so then, and since you're making that endeavor, why not do it in such a way to develop that pure and alloyed devotion? Because then you make an eternal solution. Yes? No?
Yes. Okay. Then back to Srila Jiva Goswami. Bhakti to he who is the witness of everything, who is not seen since he is made of consciousness, to the Lord of the universe, Vishveshvare, to whom others like Brahma are inferior, Paravare, should arise. Some meditate on the four-armed form of the Lord, measuring a pradesha in the heart within the body. If that does not take place, one should meditate on after performing necessary acts of karma. This indicates that karma ends in bhakti.
That's interesting. So then through bhakti, then you're seeing it all in the context of the universal form. And then that brings you to devotion. So even karma has to be seen in the context of the universal form, that you're working for money, but that power of money and that experience of money is coming from Krishna. So even that has to go back to Krishna. So whatever you want, you know, family, you know, friends, facilities, all that's coming from Krishna, and the experience of it is given by Krishna. So even in karma, you know, then in this, what is there, you're supposed to be seeing in the context in the universal form. Then from that, then you start to see it back to the person. Then you can meditate on that person. Then you come to that point of understanding has his own personality and nature, and then we can take part in that aspect of the Lord. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Vritti. Having discussed how an impersonalist jnani can advance in the spiritual path, the author next describes how a yogi can attain his desired destination by the path of mystic yoga, and finally conclude that direct bhakti yoga is better than all other paths mentioned before.
Hmm. Yeah, so these paths here is that where the karmi is seeing all his results in that in the context of the universal form, and then that will naturally bring them to the point of knowledge and detachment. That will then bring them to the position of jnana. So the Jnanakanda, and then that Jnanakanda, they continue that, and then seeing that these impersonal features of the Lord and how everything's there, and then that develops because you see him in context of the personal. This is his feet, this is his, arms, this is this, that. And so then you slowly, slowly become purified and more comfortable with the idea that God has a form. Then, then we see is that you have done in yoga, then you're going to be meditating upon that form, that person, though it's localized, but at least there has that aspect of a person, but ultimately you have to come to that person as his nature and his, his name, form, qualities, his pastimes, his associates, paraphernalia, Tom, everything like this. And then one worships with direct bhakti.
Okay, so, Anucha, then it is said, quote, O king, when the renounced yogi seated comfortably on his seat desires to give up his body, he does not attach the mind to time or place. Conquering life, he controls the senses by the mind. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:2:15. O king.
Just 1 second. There, okay. Noticing is that on time or place, because time will be action and reaction and all the results, done with that with the particular understanding, and place will be the situation that you're in. So in other words, situations and actions to do in those situations, he gives that up. So then that leaves that you're just focusing on the Lord Himself. So that's the thing is. The conditioned soul is here because the time and place, that is our focus, rather than on the Lord. And then in context of the Lord, then time and place have a value, have a meaning. We take the time and place as important because we take the situation or ourselves as the center. And we don't see it that the actual thing is, no, the situation being, the circumstance being ourselves is how we in this time and place should do things in relationship to God to please him, since he is pervading everything, he is everything, he's making everything function, and so therefore if that's the case, then it's the time and the space are simply meeting to us in the conditioned state. So why not just directly go to him and bypass all these, you know, indirect aspects of bhakti? Huh, please.
Next verse. O King, if one endeavors for Brahmaloka, or the playgrounds of the aerial beings who are endowed with eight mystic powers in the variegated universe, one goes to those places with the mind and senses. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.22.
Yeah, so that's time and place. Then one ends up going to those because space, because of time. I want to do this activity. I want to eat. I think of then places where you can eat. I want to sleep. I think of places where you can sleep. So because of the interest in time, there's the place. Or you see the place, then you think of time. So they nourish each other. But the point is they only have a value in as much as they are supporting the actual experience that is there, that is Krishna. Yes, please.
So mind and senses aren't conquered until one is no longer attached to time and place, then.
Yes. It's like, because that's the thing we think, oh, if this, you know, that's why we say, oh, if it was like this, then it would be so nice, or it was like that, or if I did this, then it would get this result, it would be so nice. These are all going to distract us because we're not necessarily talking about that directly in connection with Krishna. It may be indirectly. But the advantage of bhakti yoga is that you can actually do the same things directly. It's not dependent upon being inspired. So in other words, the time and place because time and place may be inspiration for doing things in time and space, then maybe you'll connect it to Krishna. But we see in the spiritual world, they're thinking of Krishna and they want to do something for him. You know, that's the anubhav. And so then, depending upon the particular place they're in and what can be done, therefore then time applies that. It means they perform action to therefore express that devotion, that anubhav. Mm. So it's direct because it's about Krishna. While here, then we you know, we'll do things that are not about Krishna. Sad, but true.
Yes.
Maharaj?
Hmm. Yes.
When devotees swim in the ocean, and Srila Prabhupada said that ocean is a greatness, they take pleasure by greatness of Krishna. If we will see this point from the impersonal point of view, we can think that they took pleasure because they wanted to merge in the ocean, and the ocean is an impersonal aspect of Krishna, like Brahma Jyoti, and their feelings are impersonal. From the point of view of Mahatma, he could see everything with the personal aspect of Krishna, yes?
Yes, yes. It means it's a stepping stone. It means it's showing you how Krishna is a person, how he is expanded through, because when we say he's the ocean, it's just ocean. It's the manifestation. That's what we see is also interesting. It's why it's not necessarily caught, because we have this foolish idea that impersonal means nothing. No, impersonal means it's not specific about the person. It's generic. You know, like the living room is it only becomes personal when now people will use it in a personal way. You know what I'm saying? The couch is there. It's impersonal. It means it carries the potency of being able to sit on it. Now, when people sit on it and then interact, that's where it becomes personal. So that means the impersonal is subservient to and supportive of the personal. So there's no such thing as impersonal meaning nothing. That's the you know, atheistic aspect comes up from Buddhism and the Mayavad. It doesn't exist. It's a bogus idea because there is no such thing. So that's the difficulty, is that we don't see it. But you're talking about Krishna's person, his feet. But you're talking about generic. It's just that all this is his feet. But personal is how you interact with him and his feet. You know, so what we do is, okay, it's Krishna's feet, so therefore then we should follow the rules or this or that. Then you're starting to consider the person, or at least consider then, you know, as Paramatma, as the controller of everything, then in scriptures he's given how to work with his energy. So at least then we're coming to that second level of appreciating the God aspect. But the actual thing is then come to the third level, who is direct bhakti, where it's Krishna, you know, is controlling these things, these situations. You can do this activity. This activity could be pleasing to Krishna, so let me do this activity to please Krishna. Then it comes out, then it's, you know, it's though it's gone through some steps, it comes out as direct. And that direct can then be more spontaneous toward seeing this and thinks of Krishna and wants to do something nice for Krishna, like we see in Vrindavan. Right? So this thing of merging in the eye, did they merge? No. If they merged, so that means then the ocean is enjoying, you know, swimming in the ocean? No. The ocean's the ocean, and we're who we are, and then we can swim in the ocean. So swimming in the ocean is what's nice. You know, so this whole idea of merging in the ocean, no. It means the experience of the ocean, that you can experience, and there's the oneness. But at the same time, as you only experience the oneness of the experience if there's two. So hence, chinta beta beta tattva. The devotee is non-different from the Lord, but because they're different, they can experience this non-difference. So this idea is that, oh, we experience a non-difference and we become one is bogus. It doesn't, nothing works like that. No relationship works like that. No experience works like that. It's because there's two. Therefore, so Madhva had to, you know, focus on that as two and not give any space for the one. But the point is the mood is one, the position is two. So that's where it is. It's like, you know, you have yourself and the person, and when you see that you and the other person think the same, then it brings the relationship closer. So that's what friends are, people with similar mentalities, similar interests, similar, you know, activities or desires. So that oneness makes the friendship of being of two then valuable. If you become one, then what's the point? It's that you're two. That's where the experience comes. The experience can't come if, you know. So that's the whole thing. Ananda means experience, means there has to be two. On the platform of existence, yeah, everything is one because it's all God. But at the same time is that, you know, God has these, you know, the variety of his manifestations and all that. And he, as the person, you know, then is non-different. I mean, is different from all these aspects. They're non-different in that they're his energies, you know, so is time. But as he is the person, as what is his desire, then there's a difference. And so direct bhakti means going with the difference, you know, like that. But in such a way that it's about how to please Krishna, you know, himself, like that. So that's the oneness. We're working to please Krishna. That's the oneness. But we're different. That's the difference. So they're simultaneous. They go on. But you have to know how to run it. You can't get it backwards. You know, like we were discussing before, that it's all about God had one that knows how to enjoy life, you know? Does that make sense?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, thank you very much. When you gave this explanation, I remember that one of most famous authority in Islam, his name is Al-Ghazali. He stopped influence of Aristotle in Islam, and he stopped going to the pranamoya level, and he gave same explanation to the concept of itihad. Of here, itihad means merging, and many Sufis at that time, they considered that oneness, itihad, oneness with the God, means physical oneness with him. And he said same thing. He said that oneness with God means his oneness of desires with him, but not physical oneness.
Yeah. Like that. That's the point. So you see is that there's always going to be something here and there, some truth, but then they don't continue and actually get the full result of that. That's the weakness. So only the direct, pure bhakti can give that. And everything else, it can only take you to a certain level and give you a certain understanding like that. So that's the point, is all those levels are already contained in pure bhakti. While others have some truth in them, but you can't fully access them or bring them to the, you know, the topmost position.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. Try going on time. Okay. Yes. Anything else? Okay. Yes. Yes. Jagadish?
I was thinking also that what actually people want is that closeness to God.
Mm. Yes.
But in pursuance of that closeness, they think that merging is the extreme closeness, which is not. You lose your identity present, but still somehow rather that idea is there. But actually we don't want oneness, we just want relationship.
Yes.
Means we want closeness.
Yes. We want the experience like that. Yeah. So that's why you see Gopa Kumar then when he went to that Mahakalapura. And then seeing, you know, Mahakal means is Mahavishnu. So then he's he's there, and then you know, just by nature, he starts to. I mean, just by the situation, he starts to, you know, so he starts to merge into him, and then he says, "What? What's going on? Wait." So then, you know, he has to stop that, because that's the whole point, is that they're all there, and he's so nice that they all want to merge into him. But actually, you see, is Mahakal and his associates, they don't merge. They're all performing their activities and pastimes and that. You see, like Arjuna and Krishna, you know, they go in their chariot to get the sons of the Brahmins, so they're actually going to Mahakalapur. They're visiting Mahavishnu. And so then that, because he's the supreme, you know, he's the control, he's time, he's all these different things. And so then they're going there, and that it's the difference where you have the pastimes. In oneness, where's pastimes? There's no pastimes in oneness. Yeah.
And interesting, the interesting proof of this concept that when we see in the fictions, if people ocean, no one described the perfection is a to be just with the ocean. Even if we see a story of Robinson Crusoe or Titanic, we see that it's just a situation for some relationship with someone, but only to be in the ocean or with or near the ocean or in the ocean is not the main idea in any story.
Yeah, because you want to do something and have a particular experience, as Jagadish Prabhu. Experience of the ocean, you know, the greatness of the ocean or the serenity or the crashing of the waves or, you know, the vastness or, you know, something. It's about the experience that's there, but you have to be that. Or even they say they want to be a fish in the ocean. Still, you're a fish in that ocean, you know, like Rupa Goswami saying, you know, that one is a shark in that ocean of devotion and swimming and diving, you know, in the nectar of the devotional process. So it's always going to be two. It's never one. One is the in purpose. One is in desire, you know, or intent. But in action, it's two. The taste is in being two that is doing something that's one. It's not that it's one, and you're both one. You know, then what's the meaning? Where's the point? It doesn't have any real validity. Yes. No.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the time? Okay, so then we'll end here. What's the time? Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.